At the 2017 Cattle Industry Convention in Nashville, talking with Phil Tsang, President and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Phil, you've experienced a lot of meat export markets, ups and downs over your years. It seems like after a couple of tough years, we have really rebounded nicely on a lot of our meat exports.
Well, I'd say that's true. It looks like this year we're going to finish exports this year over 10% as far as our export performance. That's a significant growth compared to where we've been. Obviously, the factory is putting out more product, and this is helping dramatically. But we've made some great access inroads as far as Korea. We're up about 38% as far as our beef this year in Korea, which means we've supplanted Australia in being the number one supplier. We're up dramatically in Japan. We're doing very well in that market. We're up in Taiwan. We're up in Mexico. We're up in Canada. So I think when we take a look at our major markets and some of the developing markets, we've done very well, and the beef industry has a lot to be proud of.
You know, you start breaking down some of these markets. I know that Japan has been a market that we've worked for decades. And it seems like, you know, everybody kind of at some point says, well, there's not much more potential there. But it seems like they always get fooled. There's always a little bit more.
Well, I think the one thing is just because a market is developed doesn't mean it doesn't continue developing. And what we're seeing in Japan is, for example, the people in the 50 to 60 range, as far as the decades are concerned, and the 60s to the 70s, those are two of the fastest growing groups for meat consumption. You have a Japanese government that's basically endorsed higher protein consumption in the diet, especially beef consumption in the diet. It's one of the key foods for people that are getting older, what they call the great generation. And so we're seeing all kinds of dynamics in Japan, and I think that the changing nature of food consumption, especially of meat consumption, is allowing for more of it to come in. There's more value added going into the market, more branded going into the market. So as we look at that market, it's still developing, and there's a lot of potential in the Japanese market. Not to say there isn't potential in other markets. Korea is the same. You have a tremendous amount of consumption going on in Korea. We're even surprised by how well we're doing in Korea. And, of course, when we look at North Asia, you know, the Chinese market is still closed to us, but it presents tremendous potential. It's been the fastest-growing market the last two or three years. Last year alone, it just doubled over what it did the year before. So we're excited about what the markets bring and what the international market foretells for the U.S. beef industry.
We've talked before about the need for government-to-government negotiations with the Chinese to finally break down the barriers. When do we get there?
Well, I think that, you know, this is a process that's been 13 years, you know, since the market was closed. And there's been some very close calls where it looked like we were going to make some progress. I think we're really emboldened by the fact that the Chinese publicly announced last year, at the end of last year, that they wanted to open up the market. What we're working on right now, of course, will be the terms of that opening. What are the terms of sale, if you will? And frankly, traceability looms very large. They want to make sure that we can do this traceback system, which we can do. And the U.S. government has already provided them information as far as our traceability. I think there's other questions that are out there that are not door stoppers from the standpoint that what happens if we have another case of BSE? What about chilled versus frozen? What about, for example, eligible products for China? So there's a few things here that would need to be worked out, but I think they're all very, very possible. And I think the fact that the Chinese have given us the green light, more or less, to negotiate, I think that's very encouraging because we haven't had that in the past. So hopefully with the new administration and hopefully with the team that we have in place already and the new people that will be on the team, they will continue to carry that momentum forward.
When you think about the Chinese market, you alluded to the one thing that has been a problem, I know, with not just the Chinese, but the other countries have asked about the traceability issue as well. I know that the Australians brag about their traceability. What do we really need in this country that would satisfy the majority of our customers internationally?
Well, I think that, you know, we have it right now with the there's a couple of things here. From a marketing standpoint or an exporting standpoint, we have these export verification programs. that'll offer us, and we've been doing this with Japan, we did this with Korea, to basically, the producers would enlist in a program, their products would be eligible, or China eligible, or Japan eligible, or Korea eligible. We do it with Europe. That was probably the first one with the NHTC program. So we have, from the standpoint of marketing and exporting the product, the ability to do this, and that's what we're proposing to the Chinese. It'd be a voluntary program that would go forward, but there would be 100% traceability. Any product that you're receiving would be from that program. I think on the other side of this, from the animal health standpoint, if there's foreign animal disease, the ability to trace back, this is something else. It's more of a production and a producer issue, so I'd leave that to the producer groups. But as far as the export side of it, I think we have enough in place with our EV programs to give assurances to our valued customers internationally that we can trace back and with our bookend system.
You mentioned Europe. It seems that we continue to have our challenges with them over our never ever beef and what they're, you know, what they're allowing us to move into that market as far as our share of quota. You know, we can, they've really been a contentious market to deal with, haven't they?
It's been difficult. I think the Europeans, the bureaucracy in Europe is enormous, and it's been very difficult for us to penetrate. We know there's demand in that market. There's 500 million consumers or more that want to buy our product, that they have an appreciation for good beef, for good meat. We have a very small portion of that. When we did the 2009 agreement, where we had duty-free access as a result of the hormone ban, and so when we won two times in the World Trade Organization that case, so this was a way of working back to the retaliation issue. But frankly, the Europeans haven't enforced that agreement to the degree, especially the grain feeding stipulations within that agreement. So all of a sudden, we're seeing a tremendous amount of product coming in from Uruguay, from Argentina, you know, from Australia, from other areas. And it really was intended really as an opportunity for Canada and also the United States. And so I think as our share has gone down, these other people from the different hemispheres have been involved. At a certain point in time, we have to say, hey, wait a minute, this is not working. This was intended for the U.S. and Canada, and that's where we are right now. But I think the Europeans have the message. I think they know that we're serious about this. And so hopefully this year we will hopefully see some progress because, as you know, when you commit to do the European market, you're committing before that calf is basically dropped on the ground or right when he is dropped on the ground. That's a long process before you have a product that's in Europe that can be delivered. So there's a commitment with their traceability system and everything that goes through there. So what we need is a little bit more predictability coming out of Europe and the fact that when we have a certain amount of quota, we have that guaranteed and then we can ship within those confines because we have the producers that are willing to do it. We have the product that they want. It's just a question of getting it right.
Right. Looking out there, as far as for 2017 and for the next two or three years, what are really the things, both the opportunities and the roadblocks that you see out there in trying to sell beef into the global market?
Well, I think right now is we need to have calmer minds prevail. There's a lot of rhetoric, as we know, that's circulating in the news. There's a lot of concern about what is true and what is not. But I think one thing that every producer should know that protectionism is the enemy of the producer. And anything that we can do to roll back protectionism, anything that we can do to have access to these markets, continue that access, it's important. Of a total world's GDP, 55% of it comes from trade. So the fact that that anything that would create barriers, anything that would impede product flow, this has to be stopped. And the United States has been a leader for years. We've had a leadership position in this regard for years. We have to sustain and maintain that position because we're the ones that benefit the most. The United States, frankly, has one of the most open markets in the world. Our average duty rates on all products is less than 2%. So there's not the biggest interest in the world by a lot of these other countries to negotiate with us because they already have access. So it's going to be hard for us to say to some of these countries, hey, we want to negotiate a deal and get a better deal because they already got a great deal. So I'm concerned in this whole process what the pause is going to look like because to give something up in order to get something better, we want to make sure that we know what it is that we're doing because it's very important right now. Agriculture is basically a $140 billion industry as far as our exports go. If you take a look what that means across the whole economy, that's almost $500 billion. That's what agriculture brings to the agricultural trade brings to the U.S. economy. It's enormous. And any jiggering with this could really hurt us. So protectionism, that's something that we all have an interest in fighting.
We need to be cautious as we make these changes.
That's right.